Welcome to the Droma Preventative Health Podcast, hosted by the Jewish Orthodox Women's Medical Association. We provide you with up-to-date information on health topics geared towards the Orthodox Jewish community. This podcast content is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice or as a substitute for the medical advice of a physician. Welcome to the Jewish Orthodox Woman or JOMA podcast. I'm your host, Elisa Minkin. I am a general pediatrician and proud JOMA member, and I'm really excited and honored to be here today with Geli Osofsky. Hi.
Hello there. How are you?
So happy to have you here. Geli Osofsky, LCSWR, RPTS, I think that's a registered play therapist supervisor?
Correct.
Yes, is a mother, grandmother, and Yiddish-speaking child and family therapist practicing in Muncie, New York for the past 20 years. She is a registered play therapy supervisor and EMDR consultant, eye movement desensitization reprogramming?
Reprocessing.
You're good. So close.
Yes.
For PTSD, correct?
Correct, and for all sorts of childhood, teenagers, I'm trained to deal with all sorts of issues MDR.
Yes. Bringing the best of cutting-edge therapy to the Frum community. In addition to her private practice, Geli runs her parenting program, Playful Parenting, both as an 8-week Heimisha telecourse and as an online year-long program. She enjoys being a grandmother and loves reading, learning, traveling, and having fun time with family and friends. Find more about her work at parenting@gelly.com, and we'll get back later to some other places we can find you at the end. Don't let me forget.
So, parentingwithgelly.com.
Is that what it is?
Parenting with Geli.
Oops.
That's okay.
I directly copied it. Okay. Anyway, so let's say that again. Your website is parentingwithgelly.com?
.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So we have to be grateful that therapy, in so many forms, individual, family, they're much more accepted even in our most Haredi Hasidic circles. But play therapy is something that I know even I as a general pediatrician find very hard to find. So I'm really impressed that this is something that you specialize in. So I definitely want to talk about that. So let's start. Let's have you explain, what is play therapy?
Okay, so play therapy in the traditional sense is using play, which is a child's first language, to help them process emotions, to help them process what's going on in their life, help them have a place to express themselves. And in the play, the child works through the story of what's going on for them and finds resolution. That's the traditional play therapy. It's just like when an adult comes to therapy and starts telling you, I'm having a really hard time. There's a lot going on. My kids are acting out, all of that stuff. Instead of talking, what the child will do is get into the dollhouse and set up the story of what's happening there. That would be an example of what a child does in play therapy. Now, many different therapists are eclectic and they combine different modalities, but I have a play therapy room, which looks like a very fun playroom. I have a dollhouse, a kitchen center, sandbox, a little table and chairs, tons and tons and tons of toys, but everything is there for a reason, to help a child express themselves and work through whatever's going on for them.
How do you do that, though? Because I'm imagining that a child might just want to play. That would have nothing to do with working out their issues. Like, an adult can choose to come to therapy to work out their issues. A child, not necessarily.
Right,
so.
Right. That's a great question. So what I like to do and what I was taught is that when a child comes in, the first thing I want to know is, do they know why they're here? And I'll ask, did your mommy tell you about me? And they'll be shy, or they'll say, because I get angry, or because my parents are divorced. Or they'll say, mommy. And I said, mommy, did you talk to Moshe or whoever about what I do, what my name is, and then they'll all smile and they'll say, yeah, mommy said that, you know, sometimes you get upset, or sometimes I'll have parents that chose not to tell their kids anything. And then I say, okay, so here's what I do. I'm Geli, and I'll speak in Yiddish and or in English, depending on what the child speaks best. And I'll say, so here's what I do. I love helping kids, and I play with kids. Would you like to get to see my playroom? And we can play together, and we'll get to know each other, and we'll talk about what's bothering you. And then we go and play. And that's how we build rapport. And when the child knows why they're here, the subconscious starts playing out what the child's issues are. A child always wants to share their story in their play. And what I like to tell, you know, tell people, I think about my grandchildren, little Meir Moshe. Mm-hmm. He's almost 3 years old. He's going to have his upshare in a couple of weeks. Thank you. We're excited. It's our first grandchild, so it's a big deal. So during Yontif, he took his magnetals, and because I do play for a living, he has his mitzvah kinder, he has animals, and he has cars, he has different things that he can create play with. And he built, his father is a Stalin a chassid, and my husband is a Slonim a chassid. So he built a Slonim a shul and a Stalin a shtul. And in that shul, he put the parents in there and on the first floor. And on the second floor, he put the animals to sleep. But he was very consciously playing out the two shuls that he went to on Simchas Torah.
Wow.
Okay? No one asked him at all. He was just playing. And that's what children do, is if you give them the vehicle, which is the toys, they create. And the toys do not need to be expensive. By design, my toys are well-worn. They're all functional and good. I say secondhand toys work just as well as brand new toys. You don't need the fancy Playmobil sets. You need toys that allow children to express themselves.
So what age is this used for?
I would say I've worked with children with play therapy as young as 2 to, I would say, the actual play will cap out at about 10 to 13, depending on the child. And I would say from 10 to 15, kids will do game therapy, which is still in the space of play therapy. It's just a little more evolved. Some of the kids will. I've worked with many teenagers, both girls and boys, that will create stories in Santre. It's a form of play therapy called Santre therapy, and we give them the tools, all the, you know, shells, stones, scary figures, regular figures, cars, trucks, armies, Indians, you name it, furniture, and they can create a story. We don't direct it. In the play, I have water like a sink, and they can actually create like sandy, wet sand, and create mountains, water, anything. So a child may flood the sand tray. That means one thing. A child may just have all the toys lined up in one spot or only around the circumference of the sand tray. And all of that is training I've done over the past 20 years to really understand what does a child's play mean? What are the themes that the child is playing out, and not to project like, oh, you put a, you know, you hit a child under the sand. In general, that means trauma, but trauma can mean anything. So did they just hide the toy under the sand, or is there trauma? And it's really context. You know, there's that, there's sand tray, there's regular play, there's art. We use a lot of art. I tend not to use paint in my office. I learned the hard way. Every now and then I say, I think I should try it again because it's so wonderful. But
and no glitter. No glitter ever.
No glitter. and just lots and lots of toys. And one thing with play therapy is that every toy needs to be in the same place so that every week when the child comes, just like you have your cupboards, mm-hmm. want your cereal in the right place, your spices in the right place, a child needs to come and see order. So when they walk in, they right away know which toy. They repeat the themes of play over mm-hmm. and over again, and that's how they heal.
Right. So which kind of children would benefit from this?
I think, you know, it's a great question, because under the age of six, I'm going to talk in generalities. Mm-hmm. I always say, unless there's a specific trauma, an accident, a divorce, a fire, severe bullying, anoresis, encapresis, wetting or soiling, mm-hmm. I really prefer to work with the parents, because the parents are the primary caregivers. Mm. They spend the most time with their children, and they are the ones that have the most influence. So I can teach the parents how to play, use play in their own home, and I can also give parenting guidance that can make a change in the life of the child. Once we get into the 6 through 12 and above age range, we're talking about children with anxiety, anger management. There's been a tremendous rise in the cases of divorce and parent alienation and conflicts, bullying. COVID has brought a tremendous rise in the anxiety levels. Children who are having separation anxiety. Anxiety itself, I would say, could be split into many different things.
Right.
There's an adjustment disorder, like when mommy leaves, I get anxious. And then there's a separation anxiety, which is I'm not going to school unless you throw me on the bus or you force me, right? Mm-hmm. Then there's OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Many children struggle with that. And there's different levels of panic attacks, anxiety attacks, and all those can be helped. I personally, in these situations, I combine traditional play therapy with other techniques, like EMDR, like mindfulness, teaching breathing techniques.
Good.
Because mm-hmm. I want the child from day one, as soon as I establish trust, I want to marry the best techniques we have with a traditional play therapy and the modern brain science, which has its foundation in how Hashem built us
right.
as beings, to help a child get the quickest help.
Right. I love this, because you're not just processing. Like, you could think of play therapy in the most traditional sense as a way to process something, like process a trauma.
Yeah.
And a lot of kids, for example, who have anxiety need to learn tools. Like, what you're saying is you build in the tools as needed.
Correct. So I would say, while the Association for Play Therapy says an average round of play therapy would be 20 sessions, which in the From world, I would say is about 7 months, given that we have, the Yamim Tovim, the vacations, the Chol HaMoeds.
Right.
It's just, you know, it's a long time. It's not a long time if you're going to get resolution.
Right.
But I immediately want to know, what is the target, so that the play reflects what the issue is and they don't think they're just coming to a happy house where they're playing, because that's actually not true. They see the transaction of cash. Some of the kids are really amazing and they're so precocious. They're like, well, you're paying, how many $100 bills is that? You know, and you're like, 1 minute. At this, you don't go to a nice little lady to pay her a few $100 to play with toys, right?
Right.
So I like to just really, if they're able to understand, we say you're going to play for 20, 25 minutes. We're going to talk together if it's a parent-child issue, and you're going to walk out of here with a skill.
So how long do they usually come for? They usually do come for those 7 months?
Depending on the issue, I would not say so. I think there are kids that I see 2 or 3 times. Let's say you're a pediatrician, right? So pediatrician, these are my best folks that come from the pediatrician who says, I had an accident, there was a fire, there was bullying, there's something that went on in the house and it needs to be processed. Call Gelly because she'll do EMDR with your kid. You got 2 sessions, 5 sessions. We just go in there. The kid is aware of the problem. They're suffering. Let's say if it's a hospitalization, I have a hospital kit. The kid is playing with it. We do EMDR in a variety of different ways that I'm trained to get through to the child. You do a few sessions. And obviously, whoever's listening, this is a skill level and nothing is general. It's all a specific situation that needs to be tailored. You can get out 1, 2, 3. Now, the same child, if she's refusing to talk and is very withdrawn, may need to do traditional play therapy and may not be ready to do EMDR. A kid who has anxiety may benefit from 10 sessions of tools. And what I find is a lot of kids that are really suffering, they don't want to do toys. They're like, if you have something that could fix it right now, fix it. And what I say is, don't worry, I make a contract with the parents. We'll deal with the issue and they can always come in extra time to just play. Mm-hmm. So my goal is get them out as fast as possible. So when I meet somebody, I have no idea how long the session is going to be, how long it's going to take. Because I like to be like a master chef, right? We're not eating American hamburgers every single week. Sometimes it's going to be Israeli salad. Sometimes it's going to be a roast. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's going to be pizza. But that's me, because that's in all these years and in seeing all the children and mm-hmm. the families over 20 years, I realize mothers are busy. So we got to get the kid to help as fast as possible, get them back into school, get the mother back into her house doing what she needs to do. And there are children that really need that traditional play therapy. They will come. And sometimes I see them for way longer than 7 months.
Right. Do you find, I mean, this sounds obvious, but I would think that if you got them sooner, then they may need less help because it just hasn't set in as much, or is that not true?
Very true. Because the sooner the brain, right, we're going with research here, mm-hmm. about the Red Cross, right? How quick do we want the Red Cross when a disaster happens? Right? How quick can you get the tents there to set up people when an earthquake happened?
Right.
Same thing is with a psychological injury when it's something really intense. The quicker you get help, the quicker the brain, the research is, and I didn't look this up right before our talk, but the first 5 days, the brain has the quickest adaptability to really just integrating help. With the first 30 days, you really have your best shot for psychological first aid before the brain starts developing what we call the negative beliefs, the negative conditions, that cement problems in your head and force you to look at the world as an unsafe place where people are going to hurt you.
Right. And I think this is true for a lot of things, whether it's trauma, anxiety, you know, compulsions. Yeah. I think of it as tracks that you keep digging deeper and deeper as you keep going on the same track.
Yeah. Yeah. And my favorite example is of a splinter, because everybody can relate to it. Who hasn't gotten a splinter? You need to sterilize that needle and lance it, you know, and get the splinter out. If you wait, it starts hurting. If you ignore it, you get pus. If you ignore it, you'll get gangrene.
Right.
And if you ignore that, well, you may, God forbid, chas v'shalom, you may not have a finger left, because you'll hurt your body to that extent. Same thing with your mind. The problem situation is a splinter, and the pus are the negative beliefs and the negative cognitions and the way we start seeing the world around us. Can we trust the world? Can we believe that people are there to help us, to protect us, to love us? Or is the world a bad place? And that really needs to be treated as soon as possible.
Right. And that's why it's so good that we have less stigma for therapy now.
Yes. I see a huge, huge difference. Huge. I would even say that we're overusing therapy at this point for children. And coming from a play therapist, nobody, I don't want anyone to judge me, but there are many things that could actually be dealt with in the home if parents had the knowledge.
Well, we're going to get to that because you also have parenting courses. So we're going to get to your parenting courses in just a minute. But you mentioned EMDR, and I'm not sure everybody knows what that is.
Okay, I can speak.
I don't just mean what it stands for because I already figured out it stands for eye movement desensitization and relaxation.
Reprocessing.
I can't get that R right.
Okay, I'll do a little 2-minute explanation.
Thanks.
Tell people, sure. And this is why I'm excited to have this talk with you, because education is key. When parents are educated, we can raise our kids and help them become healthy, happy children now and in the future,
right.
healthy, happy adults. So EMDR is a brain-based therapy. And the best way to explain it is by talking about sleep science. Sleep science, I think most of us learned this in high school. And, you know, if you don't remember, that's okay. This is not a test. There are 3 to 4 periods of sleep that we have during our sleep. It's the starting to fall asleep. It's the a little getting deeper sleep. It's the deeper sleep. And then what we have is called REM sleep, which is rapid eye movement sleep. And that happens 3 to 4 times a night. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're the doctor, right?
I'm not a sleep expert, so I'm not going to quote her on that.
Okay.
I should have listened to my colleague's sleep podcast episode. She's the one who did that one.
And what happens is during that REM sleep, our eyes blink very rapidly. Mm-hmm. And when our eyes blink very rapidly, we process the day's worth of stuff that happened because our brains are designed by Hashem to heal. And what I like to say is do you know anybody who remembers every single thing that happened?
Mm-mm.
No, actually, there are very few people, and those people, I think the term is savages.
Savant.
A savant, right. Okay. Thank you. And they remember every single thing. That was a bad one.
That one I knew.
That was a bad mistake. Okay. So a savant, look, I'm like everybody else. You know, I make mistakes. I have no problem with that. You don't have to edit that out. You know, what are you going to do?
No, we're human and that's awesome.
That's it. I like to be human. If I can make a mistake, you can make a mistake. We all can and it's all good.
We all do.
So it's a real problem when you remember everything. So Hashem designed us with an ability to process these things in the REM rapid eye movement sleep. And then we wake up in the morning. Sometimes we have a dream that jolts us, but more or less we wake up refreshed. We start again. Sometimes we remember something that bothered us. It lingers in our mind, but our brain is designed to heal. Okay? What EMDR does is take that mechanism that Hashem put into us and the rapid eye movement, and it uses eye movements like back and forth while you're thinking about the bad thing, or there's studies that are going on now about bilateral movement, which is tapping from right side to left side. Back and forth while you're thinking about the bad thing. Now, this is a huge case of oversimplification.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want anyone to go home and think we could just tap back and forth and move our eyes and we're going to figure this out. Because EMDR is an 8-phase therapy and eye movements is just one of those components. And as somebody in Muncie who does a lot of EMDR fix-it jobs, I caution people to only go to therapists who are well-trained and are certified in EMDR or under the guidance of a consultant. Because you need a certain amount of hours of practice
mm-hmm.
on there are stages, right? When you're first EMDR trained, you can work with simple things. You have 20 hours of training and consultation and a few two-day trainings. You can work with more complex things. You have another 20 hours of training and more courses. You can become a consultant, which is what I do. Okay? So you need to make sure that you're going to somebody who follows the research with EMDR. You could integrate different therapies with EMDR, but you really have to know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just my shout out to any EMDR is a powerful therapy. But unfortunately, I've been getting these questions like, someone got scared of EMDR. You don't have to be scared of EMDR if you're going to a therapist who knows what they're doing
mm-hmm.
and is well trained. It is a very effective tier one trauma treatment. And I use it at this point to help anger management, anxiety, hospitalizations, all sorts of things to help. There's so much research and adaptation to EMDR to helping everyday problems.
Mm-hmm. How many sessions does it usually take for that? I'm sure it varies with the condition, but...
Sure. So the research, I always like to go back to the research. A typical trauma, we say 10 sessions.
Mm-hmm.
That's the evidence-based studying that they've been doing. That does not take in the time it takes to make sure that you have mindfulness skills in place, a support system in place, some hobbies in place, meaning you need to have skills to fall back on
mm-hmm.
when you dig into the brain, into a bad memory or a bad incident to process it. Because mm-hmm. when it's hard and you're flooded and you're not in your therapist's office and you can't reach your therapist, you will need to go to those skills. And we teach certain skills before we start EMDR.
Hmm.
Okay. Now with children, EMDR can move way faster because again, working with brain science,
mm-hmm.
if you have a negative belief about yourself and something is sitting in your head, if you've had 20 years to let that fester, you have that many more incidents to prove to you that the world's a bad place and no one cares about you. When you're a young child and you were hospitalized or you had a fire, if God forbid, chas v'shalom, there was a fire or something, a car accident, that was one incident, or maybe you know two or three other people who went through that. The quicker we can target that and resolve it, it moves really much faster because there's not so many connecting things that let you know that things are bad.
But you're getting it early.
Yeah.
To be simple.
Yeah.
Okay. So I actually want to move on to your parenting courses because that's something that I think is newer for you, correct?
Yep.
So that I want to hear all about your parenting courses because I love the idea of, like you said before, not every child would need therapy, especially if the parents were empowered with the tools to begin with.
Right. Yes. And I want to say, you know, talking about my parenting course, it's hard to talk about it without explaining why I started creating parenting courses. So, 19 months ago, I nearly died from corona. And during that time, at some point, I thought to myself, if I survive, I'm going to create something to help all the parents who are stuck home with their children. Until then, there was no reason. I mean, yeah, I thought about it here and there, but life is busy.
Right.
And I was working full time, raising my kids, grandkids, busy. And in that moment where everything failed and in my last breath, I made that promise to myself. And from that moment and on, I had not one moment of depression. Every single day, all I did while I was semi-conscious, while my lungs had to heal for months and months and end, and it was hard for me to talk. I focused on what can I do to take the skills and the knowledge that I have for 20 years and bottle them to help the mothers and to help the children? Okay, I love children. So to me, I was very, very concerned. And I wanted mothers to have that knowledge to be able to not just love their kids in the heart, but to be able to actually learn the skills that I did in my office that they could do at home. And that's how this evolved. So it's a powerful story. And I share that because it's completely changed my life. I've helped over 200 women who I never met this year.
Wow. So how do these courses work? Okay. I know there's more than one format, right?
Right. So I have the telecourse, which is more for the yeshivish, haimish, chassidish that are not online, which mm-hmm. is more, I would say, like, I really am not a big user of social media. I'm on mm-hmm. social media for work. So, and it's, when I say haimish, every time we did this, we're doing our fourth round now, we took in feedback. So we added stories of tzaddikim, gedolim, the vart, avart in every course, or mechaneches, different things to inspire, not just be a therapy course, mm-hmm. but to really inspire. And the online version can be bought by anybody, right? Mm-hmm. So I have to say God instead of Hashem.
It's more, or, yeah. It's
but
more
I natural. Have my yeah. Hasidic stories. I'm mm-hmm. very authentically a frum, proud Jew.
Good.
But I know anybody can buy it, so I had to use that the English language. But both are the same program. It's whatever's comfortable for you. And basically, I start, it's an 8-week program. And we start by looking at your parenting skills, your childhood history, your support system, your mental health, the mental wellness. And we look at those as a foundation, because before you start thinking about change, we need to start knowing what we bring to what I call the parenting table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the Shabbos table. What do we put on it? We need to know what we bring to the parenting table. And then I teach you
about... Oh, wait, you stop for just 1 second, because when you said that, I'm not sure people know what you meant. So I want you to be more specific. What does it mean, bring to the parenting table?
So it's sort of like when you take your grocery bags and you unload them, and then you put the food on the table,
mm-hmm.
right? The same thing is when you have your children, right? What skills are in your bags? What are you bringing to your parenting? So it was a phrase that I termed.
Oh, because I was also thinking about your own past traumas or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you go into that.
Yeah, we do on a general basis mm-hmm. because it's a course. And then there's always the questions and answers and people can ask, and then we get more into it.
Or would it be like maybe how you were brought up? Like some people were brought up with very strict parenting. Some people were brought up with more. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basically I do an overview, and then it's a moment for personal reflection,
mm-hmm.
right? And then every person gets the opportunity to reflect on what their mothering was about when they were little,
mm-hmm.
what they took from their mothers, what they want to leave behind, and what they picked up in terms of actual parenting skills. Or what they're missing. And then we talk about current support systems and current mental health and mental well-being, right? So you have any issues that are impacting, and also how do you feel about yourself? How resourced are you? How you know?
Mm-hmm. When you have this course, do you say to people, you might need to get extra help? Because I'm just thinking about people who have traumatic parenting, it may be unearthed, or they just realize that the way they were parented, they might need to get a little extra.
Right. So I'm very gentle. I really, really believe, like, this course is about empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
So what I say is, if you've had a difficult childhood, I really recommend that you seek support.
Good.
Maybe it's a therapist, a mentor. Don't go it alone.
Mm-hmm.
And also to be kind to yourself if things come up.
Right.
Because sometimes we're very hard on ourselves. So you need to be kind. You need to pause. You need to do some reflection. And then if there's something that needs to be addressed, go take care of it.
Right. I mean, it's like when they say, when you're in the plane, put your oxygen mask on first.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad you addressed that. And I'm hoping to, I'm planning on interviewing Dr. Tzipora Kozlowitz. Have you heard of her?
Sure. She's wonderful.
Yeah. So she's like the post-traumatic parenting expert. So that's going to be the angle, you know, for that talk.
Okay. I'm really excited. You'll have to let me know.
Yes.
I always like to listen when Tzipora talks. We actually met in Lakewood.
Awesome.
Right before COVID, I was like, we're talking to each other for how many years? Now can we please meet? So we met on a Motzei Shabbos when I went to my brother for Shabbos. So that was nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I've actually done a bunch of other podcasts on parents with mental health problems. It's so many different pieces. This is so many different levels. So I'm glad that you address that, you know, and tell them to get help if needed. So I think that that's really important.
Yeah.
What would you say, I'm just going to throw this out there just as a sort of sampler. What are the five top things you wish all parents knew?
Okay. So that's a great question. I think I want parents to know how much they can do in terms of helping their kids become the best they can be. I talk about like social skills. Now we always talk about social skills as a curriculum. I actually have a whole class dedicated to teaching your children social skills through the power of play.
That's amazing.
Okay. I want parents to know that it is within your power to connect with your children and nurture your children. And I teach you how to do it through play. If you have 2 minutes, you have 5 minutes, you have 10 minutes. Any time you spend with your children, you're standing at the bus stop, you're waking them up in the morning, I want you to know that that moment is gold. You have the power to take that minute, those 10 seconds, and to smile and to give your kid a hug, to give them a compliment. Simple, easy to implement ideas, right? You don't need 2 hours. You don't need to wait for that special time that you're going to sit down when everything is crossed off the list and play with your child. The other thing I would say, wow, that must be five, but I have to say this one.
All in one.
It is within your power as a mother to boost your kid's self-competence and self-confidence. So don't wait for the teacher to do it. Don't wait for the Rebbe to do it. Don't wait for the Rosh Yeshiva to do it. Do it. And the way you build a child's self-confidence is by believing in your child and giving them the ability to enjoy activities with you, to express their interests. These are the things that you can do. And it's not hard. It's a mindset shift. But most parents, by the time they get it, right, it takes a little time. And it's like, 1 minute, you mean I have 2 minutes? We're sitting at the breakfast table and I can actually boost my kid right now instead of saying, no, you got to get the bus. Get going. Come on. Where's your briefcase? The same thing can be done playfully. And you know what happens when you're playful with your children? Discipline problems go down.
Right.
Happiness goes up. And that makes happy kids and happy mommies. That's my motto. Happy
I love kids. It. I love it. This is why I call the talk playful parenting. And I think that for some people, it comes more naturally than others.
Yeah, I get that all the time.
So how do you help parents who are not necessarily the more playful types? Because I think that, you know, you have the parents who just, they never grew up, like, or even like in certain areas they'd like to play. Like I have to say, like Baruch Hashem, I'm also a bubby, and my husband can sit on the floor with those grandkids and play pretend, and I can't do it. Like he can.
Right. I appreciate you saying that because I will say that firsthand, most people are not as playful as me. I can take any situation and make it playful. Okay, I've had a lot of training doing that, but I also naturally love children. And not everybody, and I'm going to say it, not everybody is born with that feeling. Some people really like babies, some like little kids, some like teenagers. Not everybody really, actually, it's most people's worst nightmare to have to sit and play with their kids. They're like, I get so bored. I keep thinking about the list of to-do things.
Right.
Just give me anything to do besides lock me up with kids, right? So,
but you know what, though? And this is what I'm thinking about, just like being a bubby now. There are things that I just love, 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 because I love children too. I'm a pediatrician. Who are we kidding?
Right.
But I'm not good with the pretend play.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of patience. Sometimes they can play. If you can get in their world and you're able to do that as a grown-up, like kol hakavod. But I think there's a lot of other ways to be playful, like even while you're getting stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the idea of learning how to be playful and integrated and be okay with who you are and what you're good at and what you like and what you don't like. Like I like reading books. I get playful that way. Not so much with dolls.
Yes. And I'm so happy you're sharing your personal thing, because I think when we share a personal experience, it also makes other people feel heard and understood.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to tell parents in my course and parents who come to me that if you're not creative, I have what I call Gelly's Game Line.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an email series for my online course and 2-minute games. So if you need a game to play, you can call in or watch the video and you have game to play. 2 minutes. That's it. You got 5 minutes. Do it a few more times. And the game could be so silly that you wouldn't even call it a game, but it's playful parenting. It's interacting playfully.
Right.
Then there's the next level where I want to do something with my kids. So you can playfully set the kitchen table for breakfast.
Right.
You can playfully have your child pull over a chair and stand near you while you're cooking for Shabbos. Now you have to be in the right mindset.
Exactly.
That, right?
You're not going to be as efficient. It's not going to be as clean.
Right. Exactly.
It's hard for type A. It's hard.
Exactly. You can playfully hang up laundry. You can playfully scrub the floor. Okay. The idea is to move out of this thinking that says, do this, do that, get the job done. I like to call it a chaverim dispatcher. okay, you're doing this, do that, right? Let's move out of managing our children into creating a happy, healthy home. You like baking? Get your kids. You know, I just told someone, in the olden days when I was little, my mother used to do cookie gun cookie recipe dough. I'm still looking for that recipe. It was a massive recipe. We did it once, and then she made it into like rolls with saran wrap. And then there was cookie dough for the next 3 months in the freezer. I'm the third of 12 children, right? And whenever we wanted to do cookies, we defrosted it. And we sat and did cookies, and I don't think I grew up with this, but my innovation is that you can make all kinds of faces on the cookies with chocolate chips, different things, little craisins and coconuts and colorful sprinkles, whatever you want. You don't always have to be healthy, you know?
Right, but you know what I love about that, and you could do this for challah too, is the idea of, okay, I'm not a person who can handle things that are so messy or take so much longer. I'll make the dough, I'll stick it in the freezer, and then I'll give them sprinkles. They'll have just as much fun, right? But your kitchen won't be as messy and you won't be as stressed. I think it's important to be honest and not to create further guilt, because I think there's so much expectation on parents, and I don't like anything that adds to the parent's guilt plate. I just don't.
Yes. And my biggest parenting hack is that you can put a plastic tablecloth on your table, and then you don't even have to clean up the table. And your kids have fun. And when they're done, you wrap it all up, and then they're standing and watching the oven, and then they're watching and cooling down the cookies and blowing on it. Okay.
And it doesn't have to be all the time either. Right. It doesn't have to be all the time either. I think also sometimes the expectation is it has to be 24/7 like this. And if you're just doing it some of the time, you're still creating that kind of atmosphere and making those bonds.
Right. And it's a real resiliency factor. And by that, I mean spending time with your children and creating that bond. That lands up giving your child the message that you want to be there with them. So when they have a problem in school or chalila, a bigger problem that, you know, like abuse or something crazy, they'll feel safe enough to come back to you. We want home to be a place which children want to be. And the answer to that is playful parenting.
Right.
That's it. You read
I love
to your kids, it's wonderful.
I love it. So I actually want to thank you so much. I want to give you a chance to tell us all the places that you can be found and where people can find out about your course, where they can learn more.
Okay. So if you're online, I'm at Parenting with Gelly. I don't like to confuse people. So at Parenting with Gelly, you can find me, you can message me. You can learn about what I do. My website is parentingwithgelly.com. So you can learn all about me there as well. For people who are not online, you can call this number. And there's a 17-minute, I think it's 17-minute, introduction to my course. So you can really get information. This course is available 24/7 as a replay. I run it live several times a year, and at this point, many organizations have called us saying parents have reached out to different funding sources to get the course, and we're working on that as well. The number is 929-99-CHILD.
That's cute.
Or, yes, I worked hard on that. Or 929-992-4453.
Awesome.
And I am here to help you be the best parent you want to be. That's my goal. And, you know, that's why we're all here, right?
I love it. I love it. This was so much fun. And I thank you so much for doing this with me.
My pleasure. It was my absolute pleasure. And thank you for setting this up. I mean, I didn't even know anything about JALMA, and people started telling me, you know, that they call JALMA and they're listening to the podcast. And I was like, oh, wow.
And now you're on it.
And now I'm on it. It's a wonderful service to the community, and
especially
the Haimashi community. I think we all need from people's voices.
Right. And that's one of the things that I feel so strongly about. And that's why we also have a phone in service. This is not just available in podcasts. This is also every talk we do goes up on our information line, which is 9294-GEZUNT.
I like that.
4-G-E-Z-U-N-T 4439868. So people can listen to it there. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Let's do good things together, ladies. Whoever's listening, let's help our kids be the best they can be, and let's help ourselves be the best that we can be.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the JALMA Preventative Health Podcast. If you've enjoyed this, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and share this with your friends. For more information, check out our Instagram at JALMA_org. Check out our website, www.joma.org, that's JOWMA.org, or email us at health@joma.org.